Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Danny Dreyer as my special expert guest. Danny Dreyer is the creator of Qi Running and Qi Walking, revolutionary forms of moving that blend the subtle inner focuses of Tai Chi with running and walking. Danny's work is based on his study of Tai Chi with Master Zhu Zling and internationally renowned Master George Xu, and his 35 years of experience running, racing ultra marathons, and coaching people in what he calls intelligent movement. Danny has taught thousands of people the Qi running and Qi walking techniques with profound results. Danny and his wife and co-founder, Catherine Dreyer, are the authors of several training programs, DVDs, and books, including Qi Running and Qi Walking. Good morning, Danny, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Good morning, Corey. Nice to be here.
Thank you very much for taking the time, and it's our pleasure to have you. Now, we always like to find out a little bit more than sometimes what the bios bring to our attention on our guests. So could you tell us about your personal history, such as where you were born, maybe your athletic background, and what it was like for you growing up where you grew up?
Oh, yeah. It was, I grew up in Colorado and, you know, went all through the public school system. I really wasn't an athlete during that, even though I loved to run. So, you know, in grade school and junior high, you have these little play days at the school where everybody has a track and field meet. So I always did fine at those, but when it came to high school to go out for athletics, I was in an inner city school that bordered on, kind of brought in kids from all over the city. And so I never went out for sports because the quality of field that they could pick from was way beyond my ability. I mean, if you couldn't run a 10-second 100-yard dash, you didn't even try out for track, you know. If you couldn't high jump 6 feet, if you didn't weigh 185, you didn't go out for football, you know. If you didn't have your own personal coach, you didn't play golf on the team. So we bridged right between the very wealthy end of Denver is where I grew up, and also the African-American neighborhoods, the Chicano neighborhoods, and all of that. And so we had such a mix of people, but an incredible amount of athletic talent. So there's no way. I didn't have anything going for me other than I just like to run. So I went out for the ski club, and that was about my running. I didn't really get into running till pretty late in life, actually. Running regularly is probably well into my 20s when I started running. And I just did it for pleasure. I eventually moved to Boulder, Colorado, where I lived for 32 years, and I just got into running trails. I did it for a pastime and a spiritual practice and a way to kind of just get away from some of the tension of the jobs I was working then. So that's mostly, you know, running came to me kind of more as just kind of my response to the rest of my life. It was more like my meditation. I could just get away from everything, go out on the trail, and I'd come back a whole person, you know. So that's my relationship with running. And then what I started doing after a while was I just got curious about running ultra marathons. And that was when I didn't start that till I was about 45 years old. And I just wanted something to do. You know, maybe it was a midlife crisis or something, but I wanted to see, well, what? I've been running a lot of years now. What would I be competitive at? And so I knew I could run about an 8-minute pace. And so I said, well, what races could I win if I was running an 8-minute pace? Well, you know what? 50 miles was about the only race I could win if I could run 50 8-minute miles. So I trained for 3.5 years, and I ran, my first race was a 50-miler. But because I trained for 3.5 years, I finished in the top 10 in my first race. And so since then, I've done really well at ultra marathon. I did those for quite a number of years. And now I just run, you know, mostly marathons and shorter trail races, whatever feels good, whatever comes up. I've never been like a super highly top competitive racer type, you know. I just do it because I love it.
Well, that's wonderful. That's what we're all about, too. We encourage people to train and work out, not because they have to, but because they want to. But when the mainstream looks at long-distance running, say marathon runners or ultra-marathon, and they talk amongst themselves and say, these guys are crazy, you know, how do they do that? So what is it about that long distance that attracts you to it? Does it make you feel a certain way? Is it the expectation of the length of the run? What's the connection to that long distance as opposed to maybe, you know, sprinters or much shorter runs?
the draw for me is that the longer the distance, the less of a physical event it becomes and more of a mental event is what it really ends up being. I like running ultras and I like running marathons, not because it takes a lot of physical prowess to do, but it takes an incredible amount of mental ability to keep your, to learn from your mistakes, to be able to pace yourself well, to think your way through, to really feel your way through an event that's that long, because you can't do that on muscle. I mean, some people do, but it's really not advised, because you'll burn out. That's why it's called hitting the wall. If you start off too fast or go about it in the wrong way, it's going to take its toll on you. And if you want to be good at it, you need to learn how to run that far with the least amount of effort possible. And so that's always been kind of my guideline. It's like, wow, how could I make this incredibly long distance easy? And then it becomes more like a mind-body type meditation. It's just this wonderful kind of challenge in a way of like, how can I challenge my mind's ability to sense my body? How can I challenge my body's ability to relax and to move in a correct way instead of moving incorrectly? And so it becomes this really amazing kind of internal practice of how can I get the best out of myself without focusing on strength? And it's so different than how most of the people who are competitive athletes look at it today. Is like, wow, it's all on strength. At some point you realize it's not all about strength. It's all about intelligent movement. It's all about, well, how can I move better? How can I get better without having to get stronger? Now, that's a pretty good paradigm to shoot for. And so I'm always asking myself questions like that, and that's really how I came up with this whole system of how to run more efficiently and without hurting yourself. Because you see, when I was running ultra marathons, or marathons for that matter, if you're out there for that long of a period of time, you know, like 3 hours or longer, I mean, some of my races were up to 24 hours. If you're going to be out there that long, you really don't want to be not enjoying it. You want to be, why go out and kill yourself for 24 hours? It doesn't make any sense on any level, you know. If I'm going to go out there and enjoy it and really see it as a process, really get the most out of it that I can come away with, then I want to be able to always be watching how I'm moving, how I'm thinking, my psychology, my physical part. And it's a really kind of a fun mind-body dance is what it ends up being. Long story.
Well, it sounds a lot like life, actually, everything that you were bringing to mind relating to the distance that we, you know, go through in life. But I have a student in Ogden, Utah, and her name is Debbie Perry. I don't know if you know Debbie and Guy, but they have several running supply stores, retail outlets, and that's where I found your book, Chi Running. Oh. And they said, you got to read this book. And of course, the acronym for my own institute, Corey Hawley Institute, is Chi, and I didn't design that.
Oh, really? Kind of, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, worked out that way. And, you know, and I've always been fascinated with Chi as a life force, as a concept. And so, you know, it was your title in the book, A Revolutionary Approach to Effortless Injury-Free Running, and exactly what you were saying. How do you run long distance and actually enjoy that? And I want to get into that. But before we get into, you know, some of the principles and ideas that you've developed through your own experience and expertise in Chi running, can you tell us what you think Chi really is all about?
Well, in my, not only my understanding, but my feeling of it, is that Chi is, as most people define it, is a life force energy. It's like, it's the kind of energy that flows through your body that basically creates life. Because if you don't have Chi flowing through your body, you're basically dead or inert, you know. Chi creates change. You know, if you look at the Chinese definition, is Chi is really the wind of change. It's what creates something to be different one moment from the moment before it. And that means that there's movement going on. There's energy moving through something. It's a matter of what I tell people that are my running students. I say, you don't need to believe whether Chi exists or doesn't exist. It's there whether you believe in it or not. So you don't need to buy into the whole Chi explanation even. The thing that you need to understand is that if energy is going to move through your body, and everybody understands at least the word energy, even in physics, energy. Energy moves through when it has a good conduit to move through. Energy that's blocked doesn't go anywhere. So if when you're moving your body, When you're running, dancing, sitting, driving a car, playing tennis, it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you can align your body and relax your body in a way that allows the energy to move in the direction that it needs to move, then you'll move more efficiently and you'll have more energy as you do whatever activity you're doing. So the idea behind applying this principle to running is that you get yourself to where your posture is very aligned, but all the moving parts of your body are very relaxed. So you got these two things going on. You need the alignment for stability and support. You need the relaxation to create efficient movement. So you're always focusing in these two main areas. So if you're moving along those principles, you're going to move more efficiently. So that means you'll burn less fuel, or you can go faster with less effort, or you can run farther or move longer, if you want to put it in any other sport. So if you can get the chi in your body to be able to flow more easily by relaxing and keeping your joints aligned and not holding tension, and then you will have more and you will also gain more energy as you move. So I've done lots of runs where I've come back with way more energy than I started off with. And there's many runners you could talk to that would, like, they'd drop their jaw in disbelief if you told them that. Like, you're kidding me. I come back from every run wiped out. So it's all in a matter of mindset, how you approach it.
How did you first come across the concept of chi? Like, as an American, and, you know, the Western version of energy and physics and, you know, the production of work and how it's measured in physics. And so you sort of look at the Eastern side of things and they talk about chi. At least they do in China and various Asian. You know, there's the Atman, and I think in Hinduism, and the prana, and different names for maybe the same thing. But did you just gravitate towards that? How did you come up with the idea of chi running?
Well, it's interesting because I really didn't think about it much until I was introduced to my first Tai Chi class. And so then the Tai Chi teacher was standing out there talking about, okay, well, you know, first thing we're going to start with is your posture. And then he gives this explanation about chi, how, you know, it moves through the meridians of your body, and that the places that it can get blocked are in your joints. If you're holding your joints tight, you can block the chi. And so he showed us some fluid movement with his body, and then he showed, well, here, I'm going to move with my joints a little blocked. And you could see a total difference in how he moved his body. And he said, so now we're going to work on having you be able to feel energy moving through your body and feel when it's blocked. I've had two Tai Chi teachers, and both of them have said unequivocally, if you feel pain, that's where chi is blocked. That's in China, as far as they're concerned, in Chinese terms, you know, whenever you feel pain, qi is not moving. That's the definition of pain, is when qi doesn't move, there's pain. And so I just took them for their word, and I believe it. Because, you know, if you feel stiffness or soreness or pain, joint pain even, or muscular pain, if you can get to the point of either unworking that, you know, that tight muscle, or loosening that joint, or relaxing a little more, the pain will go away. So it sounds like what they're saying is true. If I can figure out how to work backwards from wherever I'm feeling pain to correct my movement or to relax or whatever, the pain will go away. And it seems right. If energy is moving, you don't feel pain. If energy is not moving, you do feel pain. It's like, it's very basic. You know, it's more basic than people give it credit for.
I think that's very true, and I think that we sometimes over-intellectualize some of these ideas.
Yeah.
I'm a hammer thrower, master's level, so velocity and speed, and I sometimes make the mistake of getting my head into my turns instead of just allowing my chi to flow naturally. And I really saw that. You brought that out in a wonderful way. You're able to explain that, which is difficult sometimes, because if you like to break things down mechanically, or if you're a reductionist, it's hard to sort of let yourself flow. And my best throws are always when I'm not aware of what I'm doing. I'm just kind of like spinning in, I guess, balance, you might say. And there's a balance relationship with chi. I know that you know that. So
yes.
Now, in reading your book, it's so rich, so much good stuff, and there's some things that really stood out. One of them was, and I've done this, and I tend to be more of a power runner. So you're talking about the difference between power running, which I think a lot of people do, and chi running. So maybe you could maybe give us an idea of what the difference is between those two concepts in running.
Sure. Power running, I mean, that's what I did most of my life before I started playing around with this principle. And what power running is, really, it's using your muscles. It's pushing yourself forward with your legs. If you think about, you know, anybody out there, you know, listening to this thing, if you try it, just go out the door and start running. Most people will feel if you're sensitive, try to feel which muscles are working when you run. And so most people will probably feel their calves working, they'll feel their quads working, they'll feel their hamstrings working, their glutes. A lot of muscles, the bigger muscles below the waist, are all working to run, to push you forward. How most people run, and even how a lot of coaches train people to run, is to run upright, is to, keep your body nice and vertical, and then you reach forward with your leg, and you pull back with your leg, and then push off with your toe when your foot goes out behind you. That has worked. You can run that way. That's no problem. It takes a lot of muscles to run that way, but you can run that way. And in fact, if you were to watch videos of, and I've done this, watch videos of the start of like the Boston Marathon. I took a video, the friend of mine was standing right there just in front of the start line, and he videoed all the lead pack as they ran by. Okay, well, there's all these Kenyans there, and mixed in is a few white guys that can keep up with the Kenyans for the first mile. And as they passed right in front of the camera, perpendicular to the camera, I stopped the camera. And right there, you could see all the Kenyans had this great forward lean, and their legs were swinging really far out behind them, and all the Western guys were standing plumb upright, reaching with their leg, and using a lot of leg work. So the Kenyans are leaning forward. That means if you stand up right now and allow your body to tip over from your ankles, keep your feet where they are and just let your whole body tip over, you become a falling object. If you're upright, your center of mass, this is just physics, if you're upright, your center of mass is right over your feet, your point of contact with the earth. And so, according to Newton, a body at rest tends to stay at rest unless acted upon an external force. And so if your center of mass is directly over your point of contact with the earth, gravity's pulling straight down on your body, right? Well, if your body is falling forward and your point of contact is at one place and your center of mass is in front of that point of contact, and gravity's going to pull down on your center of mass still, except that it ends up pulling you forward because your body becomes what's called a lever arm. Your feet become a fulcrum. Gravity pulls down on your center of mass, which is in front of your feet, and it really pulls your mass down, but what your body does is falls forward. As if you can run leaning forward, then gravity will assist you in moving forward, because you'll be falling forward instead of pushing forward. So if you can imagine controlling this fall and being able to balance yourself in this nice little forward fall, you know what I like to compare it to? Have you ever been to a circus and watched one of these unicycle riders, big, tall unicycle guys? A unicycle rider does not move forward by pedaling his unicycle. He moves forward by falling, and then he pedals to keep up with his fall. See what I mean? And that's exactly what the similar principle is with qi running. You're always falling forward, but not so far forward that you tense your legs to hold that position, but not so upright that you have to push yourself with every stride. So there's this little balance point right in between upright and too far forward where you can really just balance yourself. And if you can find that balance point, you can keep moving as long as you can keep yourself balanced without using your legs for propulsion. All you really have to do is pick up your feet to keep up with your fall, just like the unicycle rider pedals his wheel to keep up with his fall. That's about as simple as I could make it.
Well, it makes so much sense, and it's so simple. And, of course, simplicity or less is more is probably the trend today more than ever. But you also make a very important point in diagrams in the book, and it's an excellent teaching book, too, for teachers who are teachers of running, for them to read. And a lot of our students are trainers and professional athletes and things, so this is marvelous information. But you focus on, and you talked about gravity going through you in kind of like a straight line, so when you're leaned over, you don't want to bend over from the waist. Is that
no.
common, as opposed to keeping your body straight?
It's very common. In fact, it's what happens to people when they get tired when they run. If you go to any longer distance run, 5K, 10K, and especially marathon distance, when you see people late in the run, they're collapsed. They're bent over at the waist. Well, what you do when you bend over at the waist is then more muscles have to support your body, okay, if you bend over at the waist. Because then, if you're bent at the waist, your lower back muscles have to support your trunk, and then your upper neck muscles have to support your head, and your quads have to support your upper body. And, it engages so many more muscles when you bend at the waist. In comparison, if you keep your posture nice and tall, then your weight is supported by your structure. Your bones aligned will support your structure. Well, then as you fall forward, you land on, if when your foot comes down, it doesn't come down in front of you, it comes down underneath you, or slightly behind your center of mass. If you keep that alignment going throughout your fall, then you're really falling from your ankles, not from your waist. And if you fall from your ankles, then there is no, you're still being supported just by your structure. So there's less leg use. What I tell classes when I'm teaching runners, I say, you know what my job? My job is to teach you how to run without using your legs for propulsion. You can only use them for the support stance. Can't use them for propulsion. And people kind of look at me like, this guy's nuts. You know, but it's true. By the end of the class, they go, you know what? It is absolutely right. I mean, all I'm doing is just picking up my feet to keep up with my fall. Where's the muscle usage other than picking up my feet, which is easy compared to pushing yourself forward?
Reminds me of a swimming coach that once told me, I'm going to teach you how to swim without using your arms.
Yeah.
And I did not know what he meant by that, but now I really get that. Now, something that you bring out in the book is this cotton and steel idea, which I thought was beautiful, but maybe you can sort of expand on what you mean by cotton and steel.
Yeah. Now, if you're using the term cotton and steel, I can tell you have the original copy of the book that came out in 2004. Well, we did a re-edition last year. We did our second edition, and I changed that description to needle in cotton instead of cotton and steel, because when I think of cotton and steel, when I think of steel, I think of like a big steel girder, you know, like a telephone pole that's steel or a light pole or something. But I talked with my Tai Chi teacher, and he says, you know what? The Chinese really use a great term. It's called needle in cotton, and here's the image. You want to imagine a needle. It's very straight and very thin. And imagine a needle sticking vertically down into a ball of cotton. He says, this is the image that you want to use whenever moving your body through space. The needle represents your alignment. That needle will support you, okay? If you run a nice straight line from the top of your head straight through your spine, through your pelvis, down through your legs to the point where you touch the ground, if that always remains nice and straight, your support is always there. That needle, you know, needles are hard to bend. Good image. And the needle is very thin, so in Tai Chi, you want to create this center line around which your body rotates. It's just like when you're doing the hammer throw. You've got this imaginary center line around which your whole body spins, you know, when you're about ready to throw that hammer. If any part of your body gets too far away from that center line without being counterbalanced, you know what that feels like. There's a lot more
absolutely
being used. Yeah, you know. And so there's this image of, like, you want to have that line as thin as you can. Tai Chi, that's like really thin line so that your body can rotate to spin really easily if you need to make a move, okay? But everything outside of that center line needs to be as relaxed as you can make it. That's the cotton. So the needle represents your alignment. The cotton represents the moving part, and especially when you're running. And so I have people keep their posture aligned really well. So every time they come into their support stance when they're running, that is their needle. The whole rest of their body is relaxed, all the moving parts. The leg that's swinging, their arms that are swinging, their shoulders are relaxed, their hips are relaxed. You know, everything is relaxed that has to do with moving. And it's interesting, because if you think of the symbol yin-yang, you know, the yin-yang principle, yin is the needle, and yang is the cotton. So those two always have to be kind of complements to each other. You can't have one without the other. Or if you have too much of one, stuff's not quite in balance. So it's a great image for that. It's a really nice image if you're talking about movement.
And I can see that image, and you're right, it is. And you can sort of see an extension of all kinds of ideas and thought from that. But what a wonderful analogy. And I think what I've learned is that the more analogies you can come up with to help transcend the limitations of understanding and for people to get it, you know, because some of this stuff, we make it too difficult. And sometimes it's so simple that the simplicity of it is what jars us.
And analogies work great. Those are my favorite, physical analogies.
Yeah, absolutely. And you present many of them in the book, which is why I think it's such a great teaching tool. Now, our institute is about nutrition and exercise and training and motivation and studying energy and learning chemistry and anatomy and getting into a sort of a mindset where you really want to be well and you have a lot of desire towards wellness and health and sort of a harmlessness that you portray in life. So it's kind of like live and let live and do no harm, as you know, is one of the primary rules of natural medicine. What is your connection in your head with nutrition. If you're a moving body and you're into running and you love it, would you say that nutrition plays an absolutely essential role to the ability to continue doing that? Does it need to be precise? Do people get too deep into one or the other? What's your take on sports nutrition or nutrition for a runner?
For high performance, yeah. Well, I will say this. You can't get high performance if you're burning low-octane fuel. That's a law. You can't expect whatever you put in has got to come out. So if you put in high-quality nutrition, high-quality fuel, you'll be able to much more likely get high-quality performance. That's what I believe in. You can't run long miles on junk food. And so I really avoid chemicals, and I even avoid a lot of supplements. I try to, you know, I eat a pretty organic diet and a pretty regulated diet. I have exceptions. I take my daughter out to pizza every now and then and stuff, but, you know, I really limit the amount of white foods I eat, you know. White meaning, you know, flour, sugar, you know, dairy, all of that, all the white foods, I call it. You know, I try to burn very clean fuel, stuff that doesn't leave a lot of residual, stuff that burns well or creates a lot of muscle glycogen, and I just kind of guide myself around that. Now, different bodies, this is where you get into, you know, nuances. Different bodies require different types of nutrition, and so I've just found a way that works for me, and, you know, I do have a, you know, diet suggested in the book, and that one, people have emailed me and said, this is crazy diet, there's no way, you know, this is a good diet, but they don't realize that this diet is for athlete, because it is a, you know, high carb, low protein diet, and everybody's into this fat-free kind of kick, and I go, you know, that's a really good form of long-term fuel. If you're an endurance runner, you need to be developing some fat stores, because that's the type of work, that is your fuel down the road. You don't want to be just having glycogen stores by eating a bunch of carbos. You want to really be increasing some fat stores stored in your muscles so you can use it, access that on those long endurance workouts. And so it's, you know, it's a tricky balance. I know that my diet changes as I get closer to an event. I have a whole formula that I use that works really, really well for me, and other people have had really good success with it, you know. There's a certain progression as you get closer to an event that really works well. So for me, for instance, if I'm going to do a marathon or an ultra, you know, 6 days out, I start really paying attention to everything I put into my body, because that's right up to the last minute, the fuel that's going to actually be being burned. And so, you know, from all the training and stuff that I've done, I want to be able to really rebuild my muscles and have them recover really well for the race. And so the first 3 days of those 6 days before my event, I eat protein-rich foods. I'm more concentrated on protein because that's going to really help rebuild my muscles. The last 3 days before my event, I consume predominantly carbohydrates and very, very little protein, if any. Sometimes I'll have cheese, but it's about it. But I want to be able to really increase my glycogen stores and fat supply. And then, you know,
what are some of your favorite carbohydrates?
Oh, gosh. I eat a lot of just grain and veggie meals, grain and vegetable meals. And the other thing that's interesting is that I eat out of a bowl. So I'm always eat the same amount. When I eat a meal, I eat a bowl, and that's it. I don't eat more. I don't eat less. So it's, and that's really worked well for me. But my, you know, favorite carbohydrates, I love brown rice. I could eat that forever. And we have all kinds of different grains in our diet. We use, you know, cornmeal and blue cornmeal, and we try to stay away from too much wheat. And but we do use kasha, which is buckwheat groats. When we do wheat, we do roasted bulgur, kind of whole grain wheat that's been cracked. But the carbohydrates, it's mostly just eating lots of vegetables, grains, fruits, stuff like that. But it's interesting, you know, when you talk about nutrition, if you're talking about really how to have good nutrition for an athlete, somebody who's training regularly or doing workouts regularly, is that you need to be eating relative to what you're doing. So, for instance, if you've got a really long workout ahead, you need to be, you know, carbo loading. If you're after your workout, you want to be replenishing protein stores and some glycogen, but you really want to be rebuilding any muscles that have been torn, broken down or anything like that. So I always regulate what I eat with what I'm doing if I'm really paying attention to you know, training for a specific event. So there's ways to regulate your nutrition to where it really does more good for your body than just kind of randomly eating good, you know, eating good but not paying attention to like when you eat certain meals relative to what you're doing in your workout. So there's recovery meals and there's fueling meals and there's meals where you really want to replenish minerals, you know, like really great green salad with lots of fresh veggies on it, you know, especially after a really long event like a marathon, you want to replace a lot of the minerals in your body. And people don't think about eating a salad after a marathon, you know, they want to chow down on, you know, bagels and bananas, you know, so there is a lot of things to be said for eating correctly relative to your training. That's kind of the next step where training nutrition, I see, needs to go.
Wonderful. You know, the information density is excellent, but it comes from, and it's obvious, you're living your chi, you know, just like when you hear someone speak the way that you are, you know, it's coming from the inside and it's real. And I think that's very important because sometimes we're led to believe that certain concepts in nutrition or training are ideal, but then the authors of them don't even do it themselves or it's more theoretical as opposed to the real life stuff, you know, here are the nitty-gritty on the dirt.
Exactly.
For example, I like running on rough terrain as opposed to a flat cement surface. And,
sure,
you know, we could get into all kinds of this, but we are running out of time, and I do want to get to your website. So maybe you could tell us what the website address is and some of the products and ideas and thoughts that you have to offer through your excellent website.
Our website for runners is chirunning.com, and that's C-H-I running. Then we have a website for walkers because we want to support everybody. So it's chiwalking.com. And then at both of those sites, we have a huge library of articles that I've collected over 10 years. And so lots of just core information that's just really valuable stuff that you just really won't read in most running journals and stuff. It's fun stuff and it's interesting reading. And then we have our products. We want to be sure to support people in learning how to run correctly and walk correctly. So we have our books, you know, that's the Chi Running and Chi Walking books that kind of are the body of knowledge. And then beyond that, we have DVDs that are visual lessons so you can actually see how it's done. And then we have audio versions of both so you can download instructions into your iPod or MP3 player and go out for a run or walk and I'm talking you through exactly here's how you move your arms, here's how you do this. Now we've introduced recently training program for marathon, half marathon, and then within the next 3 months we'll have 10K and 5K. So and the training programs are interesting in that it's not just your basic training, here's how you run a marathon, you do this many miles today, this many miles tomorrow, on the weekend you do a long run. It's none of that. It's I would say it's half of that. There is training and upgrades and distance and stuff like that, but the entire thing is technique-based training programs. So if you're training for a marathon for 26 weeks, which is what our program is, you're not only getting your body to be stronger and more efficient, but you're, every run you go out on, we're describing one aspect of your running form to be working on while you're out there running, not just getting stronger. You're trying to get to be a better runner. So the big emphasis behind what we're doing with Chi Running is really trying to turn running and walking into a practice, not a sport. You see what I mean? So if you approach it like a practice, then every time you go out to do it, you're going to try to improve some aspect of it or try to improve yourself by doing some aspect of it. So mixing that with a training program is something that's never been done, and that's why we want to offer people this, because if you're going to run a marathon, do it right. Get to be a master runner by the end, by the time you step up to the start line. And then we have little accessories. You know, we have a metronome, which is a big part of how we're about to run, to keep a really steady cadence with their step, and then the basic clothing, things like that. So we have lots of training programs. That's what people really like. It's really technique-based training.
And well, it sounds wonderful, and it's probably the perfect spot. I'm sorry?
I was also going to say, I also have a blog where I'm just talking about all kinds of subjects and stuff, and we also have forums where people can ask any question. Ask the Expert is the name of our forum. So you can, any question about running or injuries or anything.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's exceptional. So students and members that are listening, I invite you to get to that site, chiliving.com, chirunning, chiwalking.com. Lots of information. I see you've got a newsletter, the blog, the workshops, you're touring, you're lecturing. Absolutely fantastic work that you're doing. Danny, I really commend you. You know, we're always trying to support everybody out there who's promoting good health and wellness through whatever means. There's, as you well know, more than one way to skin a cat. There are certain principles, and certainly movement and exercise and running and walking, and that balance and that chi that you talked about, so important to understand. I really want to thank you so much for taking the time to contribute to the massive amount of experience you have, the work that you have in the past with so many athletes and individuals. And so let's get to that site, and maybe we could finish off with some kind of a positive quote or comment from you to leave us feeling refreshed and alive and loaded with chi.
Well, I think what I would say as a parting comment is a little more of what I just alluded to before, was really turning your, whatever sport you do, turn it into a practice and really try to master your mind-body connection through that practice. Every time you go to do it, how could you just tweak one little thing to get better at it, to get a little more balance, a little more looseness, a little more stretch, a little further this, a little more speed, whatever. How can you work your mind and your body together as a good team to get the best out of you? And how can you use that all the time? Because if you can learn it in your practice, you can transfer it into your life, and then you've got, then it's golden.
Danny Dreyer is the creator of chi running and chi walking, and he has taught thousands of people the chi running and chi walking techniques with profound results. Danny, we thank you very much.
Ori, thank you for what you're doing, too. It's great to get this out to more people.
Wonderful, and we'll look forward to more of the good stuff. Take care, and all the best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Danny.
Bye.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.